Blog Talk Radio.
Well, sorry for that interruption there, but hey, things happen, so we'll get right back into the program. And hey, while we were gone, the professor is here. So good afternoon, Professor. How are we going?
Doing good, you know, besides a little technical difficulty, but other than that, we're good.
Yeah, I'm going to blame it on the rain. I don't know, whatever. But anyway, we're here. We're talking boxing. Scully was mentioning a few things. One was that Joe Smith maybe hasn't signed the contract yet, so we don't know what's happening there. But we do know that on January 19th, we have a fight between Bobby Jack and Marcus Brown. Now, when I was talking to Scully, he did mention something that was rather obvious. Bivol is the champion, and these guys are fighting for the interim championship belt. So, Professor, you're usually the voice of reasoning here and can break this down for us. How do we have this happening again? An interim champ, a regular champ, and what the WBO champ Bivol?
My opinion is that they are just making it easier for Bivol to have different avenues to go after, you know, because out of all of the champions right now, I mean, he's the most decorated at this point, you know, because, you know, Adonis don't have the belt anymore, so we have somebody that isn't very popular or any no one knows about who just became a champion. And the other champion is Elder Alvarez, which Kovalev supposed to be taking the immediate rematch. So we'll have to see what happens with the rematch. But I don't know what they're doing with this. I just think they're just buying more time to collect more fees, you know, collect more sanctioning fees and the landscape of the light heavyweight division, you know, it's starting to heat up. You got guys that are champions and undefeated, and after Andre Ward pretty much wiped out the division, now it's anybody division to grab. So, we'll just have to wait and see how this first quarter of 2019 pans out with, like I said, the rematch and then depending on where Bivol is going to go from here. Because remember, Bivol was on HBO fighting under their banner, so we're going to have to see which direction that he decides to go going forward.
Well, what about Usyk? I thought he was, you know, coming out of that series. I thought he was the
different division. Different division. We're talking light heavyweights, not the cruiserweight. Remember, Usyk was the cruiserweight champion. Marcus Brown and Kovalev and Alvarez, all those guys are light heavyweight.
So, you well, no. What I'm saying is, Usyk, they're talking about now him possibly going up to the heavyweight division. Wouldn't it be much easier or much better for him to go through the light heavyweight division first? Wouldn't that be an easier path and more money?
Easier path? How? When cruiserweight is right next to heavyweight. Like, he'll be going backwards. So you want him to take weight off and go down the division to get some competitive fight, and then after that, move up two divisions to heavyweight?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking of when you're talking about money, when you're talking about the pay division, I don't know if you want Usyk hanging around fighting Dillian White and Dominic Brazil. I mean, if he's a cash cow, isn't that who you want? You would rather push.
Hold on, JJ. Now you're saying Dillian White. Now Dillian White, that would be a good fight. You know, he's a action-packed fighter. He don't back away from challenges, and it would be a big test for Usyk, you know, because Dillian White has shown to carry power late into the fight. So that would be an intriguing fight. I mean, Dillian White only lost to Anthony Joshua. So, I mean, you can't discredit him.
No, I'm not discrediting
him. Being on a 7-8 fight winning streak since he lost to Joshua. And the simple fact that they're on the same platform, it'll be an easier process than making a fight. You got Dillian White fighting supposedly on the zone. Usyk is on the zone, so why not? You know, I mean, you think Usyk is ready to get in there with Joshua and Deontay Wilder or Tyson Fury at this time in his first fight in the division?
No. I don't dare think that. I think he would need a few tune-ups, before he decided to even get up to that class. But you know, as you did say, though, you know, that Dillian White fight might be something very intriguing. But we are going to be talking, Professor, to Mr. Devin Haney Sr. As you know, his son, Devin Haney Jr., he's been on the show before, and he's also started his own promotion company, Devin Haney Promotions. So let's welcome Mr. Devin Haney Sr. to the show. Sir, how you
Hello.
Doing?
Hello. How you guys doing? First of all, I'm William Haney Sr. You know, I have a junior that's Devin's older brother. But Devin is the first Devin of our family, and But welcome, but thank you for having me for sure.
You're another father son combination. We've seen a lot of those come up through the years. Some of them have been very successful. Some of them have not, but. When we talked to Devin, he had a very high opinion of your counsel, as well as when we were talking about branching off into the promotion side. So before we talk about boxing, let's talk a little bit about the business. How did you come up through the game, and do you credit that as your experience with being able to handle your son?
Well, I mean, I spent a lot of my early part of my career was in the music business and working up in the Bay Area with a lot of artists that we called independent projects. And those were kind of like, you know, what you kill is what you eat, so to speak. So, you know, I got some on the job training, you know, in the music business early on. So it was kind of a easy transition to want to help him in boxing because he's so determined.
Music business, very dirty. My little brother's in the music business. You gain some business experience and knowledge in the music business.
It's respectfully such an opinionated business that, you know what I mean? It runs into, you know, it's a lot of politics. It's very political.
Well, to talk the boxing part of it, I'm going to turn you over to my colleague, the professor, Mr. Jabron Clemens. So, Jabron, you have some questions and observations for Mr. Haney?
Yes. First and foremost, I'd like to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to come on the show with us. And far as the training aspect, do you feel that your son is your project, or you feel that you're going to venture in the boxing world with other up-and-coming fighters or champions?
What do you mean by training, as far as
training-wise?
Well, my attention is 100% on Devin Haney as much as, you know, it has been in the past and it is now.
Oh, man, that's great. I did have the chance to take a little peek at the broadcast that they had on Showtime, and I see you very poised and disciplined. Is your background tell us a little bit about your background and upbringing, because you seem very poised. It seems like you don't get too high and you don't get too low.
I'm pretty much what I would consider just 100% for my son and my daughter. You know, there's no other way to describe it. I mean, if he was in football, which he initially started at, or if he was a painter or, you know, a singer or whatever, I would be behind him and just as much focused on seeing him happy, you know. So I guess that's what I, you know, my dad was the same way. He worked at American Airlines before he passed, and, you know, he was just totally supportive of us. So I would have to give him a lot of credit for the way I kind of approach being a parent.
And is Devin a student of the game? When I say that, far as, like, do you sit him down and break down film, or is it more he's more of the physical type of guy that he likes to just, you know, box in the ring, spar, different things of that kind, and leave, like, the coaching aspect to you?
Well, Devin is definitely a student of the game, but you got to remember he really, really loves the sport of boxing. So, I mean, where a lot of people consider it to be homework or consider it to be a job, a lot of the things he enjoys to do, and one of the things is looking at films of past and present fighters. You know, he does that kind of religiously. And I would probably consider it a job, but as much as he does it, it would be hard for me to distinguish between it being a job and actual being, you know, fun or entertainment for him.
Oh, man. And I know you said you was into the music before, but how has boxing changed your life as a family?
Oh, that's easy. I mean, you know, for us to all, you know, be doing something together, you know, it has brought us, you know, closer. We spend a lot more time than, you know, we would if everyone was kind of going in different directions. So boxing has probably brought us together as a family, you know, the ups and the downs, you know, because, you know, you don't always have great days in the gym, you know, or at, you know, under the lights. But, you know, I think overall it's brought us closer as a family for sure.
Have you and Devin ever sparred?
Have I?
Yeah. Have you and Devin ever sparred? And how was it if y'all did?
Oh, with me and Devin, have we ever sparred?
Yes.
Man, I fucked Devin up, man.
No, I mean on a like on a competitive
man
type
on
of...
every level, man. What do you mean? I taught him this shit, man. You thought I was doing? You thought I was just watching? You know what I mean? I was going home practicing too. You know what I mean? He don't want to get in there with me.
Oh wow! Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I just
But you know what? But you know what? Though, honestly, it would be an onslaught. It would be a massacre. You know what I mean? And I wouldn't take advantage of Devin like that because I don't think he would. I don't think he would even punch back. You know what I mean? The kid doesn't raise his voice. He doesn't do any of that. You know, he has that thing where you know you can. I can tell him, and I know the expressions on his face. You know, by the way he's feeling, but. He hasn't ever like challenged me or something like that. So, you know, I feel more kind of, you know, cocky and arrogant that a father can still have a son that's so talented and well endowed by people but still have so much respect from him. So, you know what I mean? I'm BSing around about being able to beat him up, but no, he gives me that feeling for sure.
Yeah, I know my host said, you know, I was going to get more on the technical aspect, but, you know, I just want our fans to just get a little bit of both sides of the Danny family and not just X's and O's in the ring, just know that y'all are actually human beings because people just tend to forget about that athletes and celebrities that y'all are human beings, that y'all do have normal lives, and I just like to peek into that aspect of a lot of the fighters, especially the up-and-coming fighters.
Well,
so
it's always a pleasure.
Thank you for coming on the show, and I will just throw it to my host, JK, and I can't wait to see you guys back in the ring.
Man, I appreciate it. It's a pleasure, man, you know, answering questions and talking to you for sure.
Well, I do have a couple questions for you because you did mention your background in music. Now, you know, we always see boxers, you know, jumping rope and they have the music in the background and you see them hitting the pads and whatnot. But being a musician, do you find that helps when you are trying to show Devin a particular type of footwork or how to get in the rhythm when he's throwing his punches? Can you tell us how your musical background translates into rhythm for your son?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And that's a great question. And it's something, you know, unique to point out. I'm under the belief that, you know, fighters fight off a rhythm, you know, and then when you dance and, you know, you can tend to catch a person's rhythm. So when you're catching a person's rhythm and dancing, you know how to make the next move, you know? So if you have the perfect dance partner, you're in unison. So if Devin, the more that he's on rhythm and he can, you know, time and he can change up his pace and change up his speed, you know, it just adds a more of an in-depth arsenal of things he can do. So, yeah, you know, we tend to train a lot of our shadow boxing we use with music, you know. And one of those things I learned from Roy Jones as well, you know, because that's what he does as well too.
You mentioned the Bay Area, mm-hmm. You know, so I have to ask you, any Andre Ward influence there?
Yeah, Andre Ward definitely is obviously a very, very big influence on the way in which, you know, we approach boxing with Devin. My biggest influence in boxing has been, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard, of course. That was my favorite fighter of all time. But Ward, just his approach and his humbleness and, you know, him being a perfect gentleman and not inside the ring and as well as outside the ring, you know, I was very, you know, excited that Devin looked for mentorship and Andre. And Andre has always gave Devin, you know, kind words of, you know, enthusiasm and motivation.
Showtime. We know HBO is gone now, and, you know, now you guys are, Showtime, other than the streaming platforms is kind of the only boxing platform left. Are you guys, as far as your intentions for 2019, is there a couple more fights and then a title shot? How fast are you going to step on the gas 2019? What are your expectations?
Oh, another great question. I think we've already been on the gas, for Devin to have, be on his 21st fight and he's just turned 20. We've been on the gas, and it's been because of, obviously his performances. I look to one fight at a time, and then we judge it from there. Right now we have a very, confident 25-0 South African who was formerly ranked number 3 and also beat a former world champion. So, right now our main focus is on him, and then, it'll tell from there. But we're definitely on the gas for sure.
Well, thank you so much for your time tonight, sir. Can you tell us where we can find you on social media? And any final thoughts you have for our audience tonight?
Oh, for sure. Thank you. But, you can find me on social media, of course, at Real Devin Haney. I'm a big supporter of his site, his IG. And I'm also BH The Great, THEGREAT.
Well, first,
by all means, let me plug in the fight. The fight is the most important thing. It's January 11th. It will be on Showtime and also Box Nation as well. And it's January 11th at 10 p.m. Eastern. And it's going to be a hell of a performance by Devin. And I'm sure Indogeni is going to put in a great performance as well.
Well, hey, I'm out here on the West Coast, so I look forward to seeing it at 7 and then having the rest of our night to talk trash at the bar. I'm good.
All right, I definitely believe that Devin, out of all the prospects, he's on the track. He's leading the pack in terms of, that. So we're looking to continue and have a great 2019.
Well, we hope to have both of you back after Devin's great victory.
Thank you, sir.
You have a great night.
All right, good night.
That was Mr. Devin Haney Sr. And, excuse me, already, see, here I am already, labeling people. All right, I'm sorry. but that was Devin's father and trainer.
William.
And we hope that they're having him back on the show. I have another quick guess before we start talking shop, Jabron, and I sent you a picture that he put out on Facebook earlier today showing some of the great champions. I believe it was Joe Louis, Archie Moore, Floyd Patterson. But, hey, rather than me talk about it, let's talk to Mr. Swire and see what's going on tonight, Alan.
Yeah, everything's good. Nice to hear your voice again. Love what you guys do. Yeah, no, I posted that because, once upon a time, the heavyweight champion of the world mattered. And the heavyweight champion was, sure there was pound for pound. And, you had people like Ray Robinson, who was an extraordinary fighter. You had Archie Moore, who was a great fighter. The toughest guy in the world, it was assumed, was the heavyweight champ. And everything percolated down from that because he was news. Today, sadly, the heavyweight division is sorely lacking. We haven't had charismatic heavyweights with talent since the days of Tyson, Lennox, Lewis. We have fighters now, but they're not guys who came to the sport early necessarily. I'm thinking of Wilder. Back in the day, everybody, not just boxing fans, not even just sports fans, everybody knew and cared about the heavyweight champ. whether we're talking about Dempsey, Marciano, Lewis, didn't matter. That, you know, everything stopped. He was the guy, and so it was funny that I was going through photos and came across that shot of a bunch of guys, you know, a bunch of the greats all together. So I immediately thought of you, James, and sent it on to you because, you know, when did the lower weights become important? When Tyson finished, you know, how many times did Julio Cesar Chavez, the great Mexican fighter, fight as the second or third bill on a Tyson card? It was only with the, you know, in the aftermath of Tyson that the lighter weights got the attention that they were long denied. And especially for the Latino fighters, that became really important. They became headliners. The Chavez's of the world, the Durans of the world, you know, a guy who preceded Chavez, who to my mind may have been the greatest Mexican fighter of all, Ruben Olivares, never became a big draw in this country, in Mexico certainly, but you know Chavez, he was never a headliner here in the same way that Chavez was, and now of course the sport is largely Latino driven, both in the ring and in the stands.
Jabron being part of what we consider the younger generation of boxing, what do you think about Mr. Swire's statements?
I mean, he hit it right on the head. But hopefully, going forward, the heavyweight division can heat back up, and we have one face, one name. Champion in the heavyweight division, you know, with all the belts. But, you know, this world and politics and money, you know, everybody's trying to protect their investment. So it's kind of hard to try to get all these guys in the ring to fight each other.
Yeah, well, you know, once upon a time, Teddy Brenner at Madison Square Garden could insist upon guys fighting. But today, promoters, you know, each has his own fiefdom, and your point is well taken. I mean, one of the problems with boxing today, one of the key problems, though hardly the only one, is the alphabet soup. We have a million divisions, and we have a million different belts within each division. So I'm with you completely on that. You know, the other problem is regarding heavyweights. In boxing, what do you do? You fight. So you got a big, strong guy who's agile. Do you want to fight or do you want to play, as in playing basketball or football, right? You can get a scholarship. You can make a fortune. Once upon a time, being the heavyweight champ was a way to make all the money in the world. Now, come on, we both know that basketball is incredibly lucrative. You know, the minimum salary is $500,000. That's a tough way to pay the bills, isn't it? And, you know, it goes all the way up so that, you know, do you want to be, do you want to be a power forward or do you want to be a heavyweight fighter and try to fight your way up? Do you want to be a tight end? Or do you want to be a heavy, you know, and get the glory catching touchdown passes? Or do you want to be a fighter? You know, what's the joke that, you know, it's really hard to do road work at 5 a.m. when you're sleeping in silk sheets? You know, that the world has changed. And again, as obviously, the latest influx is from Eastern Europe. But for a long, long time, the key fighters were largely Latino, and neither Puerto Rico nor Mexico is known for producing heavyweight boxers. You know, so that and the other component that really hurts is that once upon a time, where did we discover Ali when he was known as Cassius Clay? Through the Olympics. The Olympics are now, boxing is de-emphasized, plus the sport has been really neutered. Because it's more like fencing, you know. Body blows don't matter, and you know, you get points for shots to the head, but it's become very, you know, really uninteresting. And you know, the one Latino nation that has produced some interesting heavyweights is Cuba, but we get them when they're too old. You know, if they defect, and usually they're too old. And then we've got a guy today who calls himself King Kong, but has a very spotty past with substances, with things that are not exactly legal. And plus, who wants to fight him? Because you can't make a lot of money fighting him. Who's going to see a fight because Ortiz is in the ring? So we've got all those components, and we need a renaissance in boxing. And having a charismatic heavyweight champ would be the greatest remedy anybody could have. And if the heavyweight champ had that kind of personality and could speak more than one language, forget about it. It would be insane. It would be spectacular. And there'd be a ripple effect that would really help boxing in every single way. Because, boxing is now basically an internet-driven sport. I mean, the LA Times is one of the few papers that actually has a boxing writer.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, Alan, because I was going to ask you now, we talked about your film, Boxeo. We know about your role as a filmmaker, but how has streaming helped or kind of hurt the filmmaking industry? How do you look upon that, being a filmmaker?
You know, the film industry has changed significantly. Now, virtually every business has changed. The World Series this year, we saw one team that was going by sabermetrics and another team that played baseball, and the team that played baseball. The movie studios are no longer interested in getting people beyond a certain age. They want what they call brands, so that we see how many superhero movies can we see. The reason that they want superhero movies is that kids go to see them 5, 6, 10, 15 times, and they can make or lose a fortune, so that they've basically alienated what used to be the mainstays of the movie business, and those people are thrilled about streaming because now they can watch at home instead of going out to see something they don't really want to see. In fact, if you look at what's going on, Netflix making series that people once upon a time, remember when HBO was a breakthrough force in television, keeping people home instead of going to the movies by making The Wire, The Sopranos, Sex and the City, etc. They've now been superseded in the same way that HBO is no longer even in the boxing business because they had it all and then they lost it. HBO is now really trying to catch up unsuccessfully to Netflix and Amazon Prime. It's a whole new paradigm. It's a whole new world out there. And the beauty of Netflix and Amazon Prime and some other entities, there's the one that I love is called MHZ Choice, which is mainly series and movies from other countries. So we get to see Spiral from France. We get to see The Bridge and other things like that, The Legacy from Scandinavia. The world has changed, and people are staying home and seeing grown-up fare instead of going out and seeing Twilight 4 or Fast and Furious 17 or the latest superhero movie, which people, if you look at the demographics, over 35ers don't go to those movies. It's kids who go and go and go and go, and the movie business has coined all sorts of new names. So you have tentpoles, you've got prequels and sequels and retools, and so it's now more spectacle. It's like a Disneyland ride rather than what we used to consider a movie. So a lot of the movies that, James, I know your vintage, a lot of the movies that you loved would no longer get made today. The Wild Bunch, Butch Cassidy, Serpico, would no longer get made. They got made during the time when Larry Merchant and Jim Lampley were doing HBO boxing.
Well, the reason why I was asking that is because, how do you explain the success of Creed and Creed II?
Because they're brand names. And, we saw Rocky 152, and then Coogler came up with an interesting way to make Rocky fresh again. But the world was aware of it. So it was a pre-sold commodity, which meant that the studio was much more interested in doing it, and it perpetuated something that was not to denigrate it, either one of those films, but they were an easier sell to the studios. Remember, and Stallone appeared in Creed. It was a continuation, which meant that there was a security blanket for the studio that made it, and there was a pre-sold aspect for the public. They had a young hero in it for the youth market, but also people who remembered the Rocky films with Stallone were interested to see, okay, now what are they doing with this now? And when Creed was a success, obviously there was going to be a sequel.
But Alan, I know you are on a tight schedule, so I thought I'd bring you in and let you talk a little bit about the heavyweights and a little bit about how the film industry has changed boxing and streaming. So why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social media, any final thoughts you might have, and make sure you get out on time because I know the wife wants to
go out. Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, my boxing documentary is called El Boxeo, ELBOXEO, which is Spanish for boxing, and you can find that on Amazon Prime, and virtually everybody you know will be you'll see on screen, as well as probably some people the audience doesn't know, which may be more fun for them than seeing the same old, although I think we've got some interesting stuff. As for me, you can Google me, you'll find or go to Amazon and find my novel, The Beard, or some other films that I've worked on, from the Buddy Holly story when I was 11, through a film called Rebound about a Harlem playground basketball legend named Earl Manigault, who was known as the GOAT. It stars a really good cast, Don Cheadle, Forrest Whitaker, and James Earl Jones, and it's always fun to be on here, James.
All right, well, thank you so much, my man, and I'll talk to you Friday.
Okay. Sounds great. All right, yeah. Talk to you then. Enjoy the rest of it.
All right, thank you so much, Alan. You have
Take care, guys.
Day.
Bye-bye.
Right. Okay, Professor, let's talk about first of all, what did you think about when he was talking about Creed and Creed II? Do you think it was as much of a boxing film that created the audience, or do you think maybe it was because of the popularity of Black Panther that people were more interested in seeing films with young black men? Which do you think?
He hit it on the head. That product that was already there, it was an audience already catered to that movie series. So, they know that they had something there. Even if it wasn't a big success, they know they would at least came out, they would have broke even. But when you speak to him Friday, this is something that you could, if you remember, to bring up that you might want to pick his brain on, since he was talking about the heavyweight division and boxing and different things of that sort, that it's not like how it was back in the days. Well, I wanted to be optimistic about it going forward. Mm-hmm. Is that now that we have these different platforms, and now we have shows that are coming out to educate casual fans. Like now ESPN, you have Dan Raphael have a show on ESPN Plus. Max Kellerman is getting granted a boxing show. We have on Fox now. On the Fox platform, we have boxing show, commentary, studio show. So going forward, my question would be, will those things help the demographic of boxing going forward, where the casual fans are being more educated on about the business side of the sport, what's going on behind the scenes, and being more educated on the sport where they can appreciate some of these boxers and they can understand, you know, why some fights are being made and why some fights are not being made. You get what I'm saying? So even though it's kind of a down sparrow as far as the heavyweight division, maybe those aspects going forward could help the sport to grow it.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. Unfortunately, Friday we talked a different subject than boxing, but you know, but I will use that perhaps to get him back on the show as a talking point. Was asking Scully about this earlier. Pacquiao is doing some kind of uncharacteristic things. I mean, he looks very good. I can't take it away. Physically, he looks very good. But he says his goal is to KO Broner. As I kind of pointed out, it's been a while since Pacquiao KO'd anyone. Is this a good strategy? Is this, you know, as we say in football, is this bulletin board material for Broner? Or, you know, as Scully pointed out, you know, Broner's got two court cases coming up on the same day, one in Atlanta and one probably in Cincinnati or somewhere else. I'm not even sure anymore. But anyway, you know, I mean, that's something that he has to sort out before the fight. What are you thinking here? Cocky Pacquiao? Broner business as usual? What's your thoughts here, man?
It's so much. But far as you're saying about Pacquiao and knocking someone out, his last fight, he knocked Matisse out. That's how he got the belt.
Okay. You're right. I did, you know, but between that, I mean, you know, are we going to have another, you know, lapse in between like we did, you know, this one in Matisse, or, you know,
but you have to look at the opponents that he faced, you know. The opponents that he's faced, you know, I can honestly say I was one of the people that at one point in time I was saying the same thing. I'm like, well, wow, he used to knock all these people out and this and that. But I had to take a look at a couple of things where over his last couple of fights, he's fought people at their weight, which is different from when he was knocking people out. Think about it. De La Hoya had to come down and drain himself to fight him. Margarito had to come down to fight him. Cotto had to lose weight to fight him. All those fights was at catch weight. Those guys that he destroyed was at catch weight. So the guys that he fought at their weight, where there's no catch weight, you know, he not knocking him out. You got to realize this guy is a small dude. He started at paperweight, you know. He's probably like 105 pounds. Yeah, so him moving up all those weight classes, I mean, all right, we'll just look at his opponent. Jesse Vargas, who knocked him out? Nobody. Floyd Mayweather, we know the answer to that. Timothy Bradley. Who knocked him out? Nobody. So you got to actually pay attention to who his dance partners are, and ain't nobody knocking him out. I can see if you putting Pacquiao in there with a guy that everybody's knocking out, and then when Pacquiao get in there, he can't get him out, then you will have to raise your eyebrows. But it's a level of competition, and Pacquiao's a naturally smaller guy. But when you say things seem different, I'm going to tell you what's different. And this is just my opinion. But it's facts and my opinion. There's no Bob Arum. Bob Arum used to do all of the talking. What he used to say, I'm going to talk to my promoter, Bob Arum, and Bob Arum will decide what we're going to do. You know, it was always Bob making the decisions, basically talking for him. You know, Manny didn't do a lot of talking. Like, he would talk, but he'll give you a politically correct answer. Now you're starting to see the personality of Pacquiao. He's his heart, not just trying to be politically correct. You know, you think he didn't want to fight a lot of guys on the other side of the street in the past? Yeah, he probably wanted to, but that wasn't part of Bob Arum's plan. And to give credence to what I'm saying, just look at Terrence Crawford, right? He talk a lot on social media, but when it come down to the come down, Bob Arum is making the decisions on those fights, you know? And the only reason I think we got Amir Khan was because Bob Arum decided to go with Collazo. Yeah, we'll put him in there with Collazo to show these guys, you know, I will go across the street. Right? But guess what happened? It was too much backlash. It was too much of the fans and the new media coming out and just trashing the fight. So what they do, let me go get a more marquee guy that's a name, not far as a competition, but we're going to go get a big name that we know could put butts in seats and that could sell a fight. And that's what he did. He went and got Amir Khan and put him in there with Crawford, you know, and which is a more lucrative fight, something that's going to put butts in seats, but that's not actually the fight that fans want. You know, they're looking for the Sean Porters, the Errol Spences, the Keith Thurmans, you know, those type of level of fighters, but they deflected. They sent out this offer to Danny Garcia, right? This lets you know where they really wanted to go. They sent an offer to Terrence Crawford, $3 million to fight Danny Garcia, right? And, of course, Danny and them turned it down. They ain't even looked their way. But they sent Amir Khan $5 million plus pay-per-view upside. So that lets you know if they really, really wanted that smoke and they really wanted to go across the street, that they would have sent Crawford. Why they ain't sent Danny Garcia $5 million? Because that lets you know they really didn't want that fight. They wanted the public to think, like, oh, wow, why is Danny Garcia turning down Terrence Crawford? Well, he's scared of Terrence Crawford, you know? But that's just how the business is, you know. So going back to Manny Pacquiao and Broner, Manny Pacquiao now don't have to sit there and be politically correct. He could be himself. If you watch the All Access, he was being very joking, like he was being sarcastic, being jokeful, playful, you know, and he's come out in interviews and saying that he's willing to fight the winner of the Mikey Garcia Errol Spence fight. He will take on the Keith Thurmans and the Sean Porters. He's willing to challenge himself. So I really think that Manny Pacquiao not being under Bob Arum have a lot to do with, well, what we're seeing with Manny Pacquiao. But I'm not liking the narrative that they're trying to spin on the fight with Showtime building this up, and you keep hearing Adrian Broner talk about $100 million and all this stuff. I'm not liking that they're trying to make this fight bigger than what it really is. Like, they're trying to make it like Broner is this big cash cow, like this big – well, he is a cash cow, but far as the competitive part of the fight, like, he's not Floyd Mayweather. He's not an A-level fighter. He might be an A-side fighter and putting butts in seats, but he's not that level type of a fighter, which the narrative they're trying to spin.
Are you saying that the Chalo twins were right?
Meaning?
When they decided that, they didn't want to be on the undercard of Adrian Broner when they felt that they were better fighters than Adrian Broner, especially when both of them were undefeated. Now that might change a little bit, but as you said, he's on the A side as far as putting butts in seats, but as far as, whether you want to, put him in the top tier or not, that is still relatively opinionated.
I mean, the Chalos went and tried to make a lane for themselves. So, I mean, Broner, at the same time, you can't be mad at Broner because, I mean, he is putting butts in seats, people paying to see him. Not necessarily win. See, they treat Broner the same way they treated Floyd. It's people paying to see him lose. They're not there to support Broner. They're there to watch him lose. They want to see him lose. And they will continue to pay money to see him lose.
That was going to be my next question. Do you think that, if he loses to Pacquiao, but you've already answered the question now because, you said you think that he would have the same audience whether he lost or not. Let's talk about some of the awards that were handed out this year. According to ESPN, Herd and Lore, Fight of the Year. I thought it was a good fight, but Fight of the Year? Your thoughts? I think I heard Jabron beep in there.
No. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you. We're good. Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, I'm here.
I was. Did you hear what I was asking?
No, I didn't because I got disconnected. My headset had came out.
No, I was talking about Ring Magazine, ESPN, named Laura versus Herd the Fight of the Year. What did you think about that?
Not bad.
Did you have it up there among your finals?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. That's a very intriguing fight, yeah.
The young man that we just saw a couple weeks ago, Mr. Teofilio Lopez, prospect of the year. Now, this young man, I thought was kind of well-deserving of that title, especially after the way he's dispatched his last two opponents that we saw on TV. What do you think is the outlook for this young man? And do you see him making noise immediately, or do you think maybe he needs another year under his belt?
And who is that?
Lopez, Teofilo Lopez, prospect of the year.
No, he's the good. He's a big dude, man. And I think maybe by the end of 2019, we might get him and Devin Haney in the ring against each other.
Now that's a very intriguing fight, and I think there might have been a little trash talk between the two of them also.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know, but I know that'll be a very intriguing fight.
Okay, let's see. Degel against Chris Eubanks Jr. This should be February 23rd in London. We've seen Eubanks Sr. You know, he's had a lot of trash talk, but then again, Eubanks only lost. Eubanks Jr. has only lost two fights, and he does have 21 KOs. So, what do you think about this fight with him against Degel?
It's going to be an action-packed fight, not because both of them are highly talented and skilled. It's going to be an action-packed fight because James is old and Chris Eubank Jr. is limited. So they both going to be in front of each other, letting it fly.
I'm trying to look at some of this other stuff here. You know, I was looking at this Mayweather thing. I don't even know what to call it. What would you consider your knockout of the year of 2018? Take it off mute.
Who was the finalist?
No, I'm asking you, who was your knockout of the year?
Right, but who was the finalist? What was the finalist?
That's one. I haven't seen that one on let's see, maybe it's on Ring Magazine. I was looking at ESPN.
That's a tough one. Let me see. Knockout of the year. See, they need to make a different category with knockout of the year, like, because it could be the best looking knockout, like far as how did it look, or are they basing it on like the level of competition? Because you can look spectacular knocking out a cab driver, but as far as the level of competition that's across the ring from you. You know, I would say my finalists would have to be Luis Ortiz, Deontay Wilder, because of the level of competition. Because Deontay Wilder is the champion, and Luis Ortiz, I mean, was undefeated, title contender, which is a very skillful boxer, which a lot of other fighters lined up to fight him. And Deontay stepped up to the challenge to face him. Another one, I would say, I don't know, man. That's a tough one, man. That's for me, that's a tough one.
What about the young prospects that we just talked about, Lopez?
Who did he knock out?
Didn't he? Maybe I'm thinking of the wrong guy. I'm thinking of the guy that got knocked out. He knocked him out in the third round.
No, he knocked guys out this year. But I'm saying, who did he knock out? I don't care how it looked. It's about who he knocked out.
He's an
up and coming fighter. He ain't knock out no champion or something.
No. I'm not going to say you necessarily put him in the cab driver category, but hey. I was also looking at David Benavidez.
For knockout?
Benavidez.
Yeah, but who did he knock out?
Yeah, well, okay, all right. Who did he knock out?
That's what I'm saying. Like, please, trust me, it was some spectacular knockouts this year. I mean, go down the line, even the David Lemieux. Didn't David Lemieux knock out Curtis Stevens, or was that last year?
That was last year.
That was still devastating. But, please, he knocked out Spike O'Sullivan this past year.
Yeah, he did.
He knocked out Spike O'Sullivan. It was a lot of pretty knockouts. Look at Dillian White knockouts. When he knocked out Chisora and when he knocked out Lucas Brown. But once again, who are those fighters? You know what I'm saying? They were spectacular. They looked great. But far as where are those two fighters when you're thinking about level of competition?
Let's venture back a bit into that territory, level of competition. Javonte Davis says he's ready for Adnan Marius. Is he?
Why shouldn't he be? I mean, all he got to do is just get through fat camp and fight him. I mean, Adnan Marius, come on, man. Let's just be realistic. You know what I'm saying? I like Abner. He's a good guy. Love his attitude. You know, always train hard and all that. But let's be honest. If you ain't doing nothing with Santa Cruz, what are you doing with Tank? If you can't get Santa Cruz out of there, if you can't outbox Santa Cruz, what are you going to do with Tank? And we're talking, he's moving up a weight division.
Okay, so you give Abner no chance, but let's go the other way. And we've talked about this many times, and I've always said it was a mismatch, and you've always said it was going to be a pretty good fight. And you know I'm talking about, of course, Spence and his fight. I don't. Since Morris doesn't have a chance, why do you think Spence is going to look spectacular against a smaller opponent that's coming up two weight classes?
Come, Mikey, a better fighter than Abner Morris. that's an easy answer. Like, Mikey's just a better fighter than Abner. For one, Mikey undefeated. For two, Mikey got skills. For three, Mikey can punch. And four, Earl got to go to fat camp too.
I almost find that, you know, it would be laughable if one of these guys didn't make weight. We've seen it so much, as you said, I mean, not once have you said training camp, you've always said fat camp. So that kind of shows you what we have to expect nowadays. Guillermo Rigondeaux. He's coming back. He's going to be up here in L.A. January 30th. He's going to be, of course, against Giovanni Delgado. What do you think? I mean, you know, Rigondeaux, is it too late? Is he sure? I mean, are we seeing a lot of these guys now fighting for, you know, the possible paychecks that they missed when they were younger? Or, you know, do you think Rigondeaux can get back and be a viable contender?
Come on, JK. Contender? Contender? Man, what? Rigondeaux can be a champion. Are you kidding me? Like, everybody took that loss. Like, oh, he's over the hill. He's done. The dude had to move up two weight classes just to get a fight. Nobody wanted to fight him. We ain't hear Santa Cruz, Carl Frampton, who else? Abner Mares. We ain't hear none of them dudes calling Rigondeaux out. Here it is, Abner going to fight Tank. But you got a guy your size and Rigondeaux. Nobody want to fight him. Like, come on, man. We're going to see. Man, I'm going to tell you. It's so sad that people get blackballed, and especially in the sport of boxing. That's the problem with Rigondeaux. Because what happened is Rigondeaux don't have a crowd-pleasing style, right? So what happened was they was going to get rid of Rigondeaux, right? You know those fights where they call the cash-out fight? He was put in a he was put in a cash out fight, right? That they felt that, oh, he's gonna get destroyed, and we could just use him as a gatekeeper, you know. But guess what? He upset the apple cart, and that was the Neto Dornier fight. You remember that fight long time ago? That was a cash-out fight. That was a fight that Rigondeaux wasn't supposed to win. That was a fight where Neto was supposed to, like, spectacular and knock this undefeated Cuban guy out and ride off in the sunset and continue on. But guess what? That didn't happen. He upset the apple cart. So then the handlers had to figure out what to do with this guy, because he's not crowd pleasing, but nobody can beat him. So they blackballed him. That's why you only seen them fighting one time a year, sometime maybe not in 2 years. Then they put him in a situation with Rigondeaux to move up two weight classes, right? And if he lose the fight, he don't get to go down and defend his title. They stripped that man of his title and didn't give him the opportunity. Didn't give him the opportunity to defend his title in his weight division. They stripped him and took him out of the rankings, which is BS. When Cal Brook did the same exact thing, moved up two weight divisions, fought Triple G, and moved back down to defending his title against Errol Spence. But they blackballed Rigondeaux, and that's what happened. So, yes, he still has a chance to become a champion and be a good champion if he don't get blackballed.
But if you said a couple things there, though. First, you know, and first and foremost, and we've been talking about this for years on this show, Rigondeaux does not put butts in seats. We all know how skillful he is, and as you mentioned, none of these guys are calling out Rigondeaux because they know that there's no cash cow at the end of it. This is it's a tough fight, and you know, as the phrase we already use, it's more risk than it is reward. So why do you think, or why do you think Rigondeaux's camp think things are going to be any different this time around?
He got Al Heyman. Remember before, who was he with?
I don't know. Let's see. Ronnie was his trainer.
Uncle Bob. You know he was with Bob Arum. He was with Uncle Bob.
Yes.
And when he got from up under Uncle Bob, what happened? He got a big fight. It was crazy that he had to move up two weight classes, but who got him the big fight? Al Heyman.
The guy who stands for boxing.
So I think that with him being managed by Al Heyman now, that he will be in a better position to get more fights and better fights.
Well, look,
instead of being blackballed.
Let's hope your crystal ball works out there, Professor. But, hey, man, thanks so much for coming in, bailing me out, as usual. And we look forward to talking with the champ again next week. You can find me on Facebook at the Pugilist Corner. You can also find us on Instagram. You can look for our YouTube, we're going to open that back up, and we're going to try to play a little video Facebook streaming here during 2019. So we're looking for a little expansion. DeBron, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, and give me your final thoughts for the evening, my man.
Well, as always, thank the listeners, thank our guests tonight for coming on, and thank you, JK. And as I always say, keep supporting boxing. We have a lot of fights coming up in the first quarter of the year. Check your calendars and tune in and keep supporting boxing. I'm Jabran Clement. You can find me on Facebook. That's J-A-B-R-A-N Clement, C-L-E-M-O-N. JK, let them know where they can find you at. And thanks, as always.
All right, well, don't forget, check us out right there on the Pugilist Corner on Facebook. And don't forget, we also feature the Weekend Wrap. And you can always find all our archives on Blog Talk Radio / West Coast Steel Affair. Have a great night, everyone. Look forward to talking to you next week. Thank you, Jabran, and thank our guests. And thank you, our audience. Look forward to serving you much, much better in 2019. Thank you for your support in 2018.